Cardinal Sarah, one of our favorite cardinals, has broken the silence about migration, also about how bishops are fearful to speak in this current time, which is no surprise, somewhat of an understatement. Here today, I have Tim Gordon. We're going to talk about it. Tim, how are you?
Pretty well. How are you?
Good. We had some technical difficulties, all these software updates. Man, technology.
Technology. For me, when this stuff happens, it's like first thing in the morning, it's like in the fives here. So it's, we both had some tech stuff, yeah. And it just a pain in the hiney.
Yeah. Tech, software, all that. Anyway, we're here. So there's a lot of news out, you know, before we get into Sarah. I saw that, you know, before we rolled tape here, the new document, Pope Francis put out the new document from the Youth Synod. And I scrolled through it.
I didn't
and,
see that.
Oh, you didn't see it? I scrolled through it.
No. A
few eye rolls in there. We'll, of course, cover it. But that's new. It was signed on the 25th, so it's a week late publishing. Wow. But that was big news. So let's talk about Sarah. There's this Breitbart article that covers it. Vatican Cardinal, encouraging immigration represents the gospel. Now, a couple days ago, you and I put out a video, our second video on immigration. We actually cut that video in mid-January. It was from the archives. Mm-hmm. But it's appropriate because it comes out right on the statement from Sarah. What do you think about Sarah's statements here?
Misrepresents. He says it misrepresents the gospel. And I think this man, I think you said represents. I think this man is right on point. In many ways, the beating heart of this thing is when he talks about betrayals. He talks about misrepresentation of the gospel with eisegesis rather than exegesis. But the beauty of this and what stands out the most is when Cardinal Sarah starts talking about the irreplaceable value of the old continent, the principles of the old continent. And this is, think about what this is in the geopolitical situation, people. This is an African cardinal saying that Eurocentric values, not insofar as they have anything to do with race, but insofar as they have to do with Christianity, the beating heart of Christianity has always been Europe until 150, 200 years ago. And he says, if that dies, then the world dies.
Actually, Tim,
as well.
It still is in an antichrist disgusting way through the UN and the EU.
It's true. That's true. Well,
they're still wielding their power. It's just they're no longer doing it for Christ. It's a bummer.
Agreed. Undeniable. No, it's not even a. Yeah. It's not even an opinion thing that I agree or disagree. It's just it's undeniable to say that Europe is not the center of Christendom, because Europe is, of course, because Rome is the first see, and so there's an intoxicating power when you listen to a wise African cardinal, prelate, churchman, in some sense statesman, talking about the irreplaceable value of Europe, and when Europe abandons its post, everyone loses. It's beautiful.
Yeah. And, you know, this is also, have you seen the news, Tim, where Pope Francis won't meet with the Italian minister because of the Pope's stand on immigration? So
yes.
Here we have the Pope in loggerheads with the Italian government, or at least one official.
Unreal.
And then we have a cardinal from Africa praising the European Catholic patrimony.
Right. It's the irony is thick. And it's like, as Saul Alinsky used to say, they took the photo, they cleaned it, and they polarized it. They sharpened it and they polarized it. Now we've kind of polarized, you know, you have the European, you know, he's South American born, but our Pope is, of course, a European by descent, leader of the free world, as we often call our president. That's really what the Pope is, the Bishop of Rome, saying pro, you know, really what it boils down to is national sovereignty. And, Pope Francis, as everyone out there knows, has says the least national sovereignty-like statements, even from the beginning of his papacy when he's camouflaging his liberalism a little bit more. You get, you know, Cardinal Sarah saying explicitly, directly, pro-sovereignty statement saying, look, when we don't acknowledge national borders, national culture even, everybody loses. And it conduces to a new form of slavery. That's very powerful. Now, we're Americans.
Yeah.
You and I. Not all of our audiences, but to Americans, when you have a black guy saying what you're doing conduces to a new form of slavery, or a black woman saying this equals slavery, the way there's some really great speakers from Africa saying this about abortion, it turns heads.
Yeah.
And the only possible response to such an eloquent, decent, prayerful prelate of the church who's African, who is faithful, is one. There's only one possible response, and it's Cardinal Casper gave us that response a couple years back where he said, oh, just ignore him. He's African, he said.
Yeah.
Unreal.
And then he said, I didn't say that. And then Ed Penn pulled the tape and said, yes, you did say that. And it was like, busted. And then we never heard about that again. And yet Casper still rides on the float, on the parade for Pope Francis.
He rides shoddy.
Yeah, he rides shoddy.
He does.
Do you think, you know, we did that episode last week also with Dr. Jay Richards. And we were talking about, you know, Catholic countries versus Protestant countries and prosperity and whatnot. And he brought up the point about, in particular, the South American nations, that the Spanish and the Portuguese were more of an extraction culture. Go in, take the money, take the gold, take the products, bring it back to Europe. Is there a historical precedent for South American sovereignty to have been eclipsed? Is it just something he doesn't under, like, we Americans love our sovereignty, we celebrate it, it's a big part of who we are. I think even Europeans have that. You know, when I'm in Europe, they love being Italian or Spanish or even Basque, you know, Irish. It's a huge part of their identity.
Right.
I'm not familiar with South America, so I don't know. Maybe we need our listeners to leave comments, but are Argentinians just psyched about being Argentinian, or is it just meh?
Well, remember, one of our first big shows was the Peronis Pope show, and I don't know much more about South American, you know, geopolitical culture than you do, but I do know that a big part of what it is to be Argentine, of all the other countries, is a fierce pride. I don't know if geopolitically this means, you know, keep our culture in, but I do know that this was part of Perón's program, the one Perón, and it was part of the nationalism effort there. So it's at least, if that's the only country in South America, let's assume for arguendo that it is, then it's at least a cultural item there. It's a cultural factotum that South Americans acknowledge. I do know Central Americans understand. I know what most Americans don't understand. I might have mentioned this in one of our recent immigration episodes, is that the northern border of Mexico is, of course, the USA, and they're intentionally flooding the borders with their own people. Remember, Vicente Fox was outspoken in his support for this, which is a completely perverse thing to want to lose your greatest resources, your people. But on their southern border with Guatemala, the order was shoot on sight if they see Guatemalans going north. So it just seems to be at least to my American perspective, who's lived all over the American West and South, it seems like the further south in Latin America, the more the watchword is just El Norte, move north. If you're in Guatemala, go to Mexico. If you're in Mexico, go to America. And that does represent, just to come right around to answering what you asked, that represents a central failure in understanding what a nation is, national sovereignty. You should stay. You should fight. I mean, when do you ever hear words like Cardinal Serra's that admonish, if you have a tyrant at home, I'll try to get the exact quote, if you have a tyrant at home, don't flee your country, stay and fight, make the culture good. What if we did that in 1775, falling upon the Tea Act and the Townsend Acts, right? if we just ran to Canada, it wouldn't be bad. Sometimes you got to stay and fight, and that's what it is to be a nation.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a family. It's the idea that nation is family. We've gotten away. In America, we don't have that because we're the melting pot. But, you know, and yes, you can adopt and bring in people from another family and legally incorporate them into your family. It's totally legit. But they're your family. You take on the last name. Right. So, you know, nation comes from natus in Latin. These are people who are born together. Right. That's what a nation is. It has to do with birth, family. So and the leaders are the fathers. And you look at any, you know, Thomistic manual, you look at Thomas Aquinas himself, they all understand citizenship under the fourth commandment, honor thy father and thy mother. Why? Yes. Because political leaders are fathers or mothers. Always and everywhere. I mean, this is the Catholic tradition. You can't get away from it. I want to look at another portion here on Cardinal Serra. He says, I'm going to piggyback off the quote you just said. Is that what the church wants? He asked, adding that the church should not support this new form of slavery that is mass migration. Then he says, God never intended these fractures, end quote. Is that him throwing a shadow jab towards Francis regarding his statement that God wills the plurality and diversity of not only religions, but, you know, all the mess that's listed there in his Abu Dhabi document? Or do you think he's just, that's not intended?
It seems to be a jab, cross, maybe hook combo because.
Okay. Yeah, so you think it's a takedown right there. Yeah.
Don't you?
Yeah. I mean, when I read I thought Abu Dhabi, I thought, oh, because he's talking about God's will here. And he's talking about these fractures. So it's not just religious fractures, but also these political fractures that Pope Francis celebrates and encourages. He's saying they're not part of God's positive will. God never intended is always positive will. God never intended these fractures.
Right.
So, yeah, I think he, the Dubia cardinals, maybe Cardinal Muir, are having cappuccinos in the morning after mass, and maybe they're and Schneider, maybe they're saying, hey, let's start subtly knocking this down. I wish they wouldn't be so subtle.
Arguably that's not too subtle, but it is. I think you're right. I think it's a jab in the mouth of the Abu Dhabi thing. Then it's definitely at least a cross, you know, straight overhand, right in the face of the Pope, who's, remember, for whom immigration has been a central fixture. If you were to analyze documents and statements made by this Pope over the course of the 6 years he's been Pope, that would probably be the most consistent topic. If you just went through and you said, mine these quotes for unity, consistency, thematic unity and consistency. Probably the biggest, because he was on point the first 2 years. He waited to get into the H-word type stuff for about 2 to 3 years. And then that stuff started coming out in spades. He would only trickle that out. But he was pretty much always on point. Remember what we said about Laudato Si, about immigration and all that. And, I mean, Cardinal Serra says there are some who yield to the morbid, wicked temptation to align the church with the current values of Western societies. This is the Pope. So that's at least an overhand right, because he is directly contradicting what the Pope says, and the Pope's not authoritative on migration.
That's right. You know, funny anecdote, when I was in Rome 2 years ago with a group of seminarians, I was invited to attend a Latin Mass at St. Mary Major's at the tomb of St. Pius V. The problem was it was scheduled at the same time as a group meeting to which I was invited with Archbishop George Ganswine, who is the caretaker of Benedict XVI. By morning and by afternoon, the, I guess not caretaker, but
personal secretary.
Yeah, of Francis.
Undersecretary. Yeah.
So he's both. So that sounded pretty interesting. I wanted to go to that, maybe ask some questions. But knowing me, which one do you think I chose?
Santa Maria Maggiore.
Yeah, I went to Latin Mass at St. Mary Major on the tomb of St. Pius V Lepanto Pope. I mean, the Ansline's kind of cool, but not that cool. So anyway, I went to Latin Mass on the tomb of Pius V, Mary Major. It was awesome. Incredible moment. But afterwards, I asked the seminarians, hey, tell me about the Ganswine meeting. And they asked a bunch of questions, a lot about Benedict. How is he? How's his health? What's he thinking? What's he talking about? But one question was, what is the theme of the pontificate of Pope Francis? Mm. And Ganswine said, immigration.
I like it. Yeah. Yeah. That's what I figured.
Which is not particularly Christian.
No.
You know, if you're thinking about like Leo XIII, I think of the Leonine prayers. I think of the St. Michael prayer. I think of all the encyclicals on the rosary, four encyclicals on Freemasonry. That's what he's about. Those are all Christian things, right?
Coming modernism.
Yeah, fighting heresy, standing up for doctrine, rosary. It's like, immigration. I mean, you could be Barack Obama. You could be on the UN to teach that. I mean, there's nothing particularly Christian specifically specified anything Catholic about immigration. In fact, historically, Catholicism is opposed to mass immigration. Think of a bunch of Franks who started going into, I don't know, Switzerland, taking it over. Right.
Or Rome. We don't appreciate it.
They don't like that. Yeah.
Visigoths and Vandals. We know there's an inherent danger to the immigrant. They've taken to call it migrant. Right. To the immigrant himself and to the country being invaded itself and the citizens thereof. Yeah, we understand that's a dangerous thing, right? If it wasn't, then the Colosseum would still have all its marble on it. So we know that this can go head south fast.
Right. Yeah. And it's remarkable that we have an African cardinal laying it down. Now, what do you think's going on in the background when these things come out, or when Mueller put out his manifesto?
Right.
What goes on with Cardinal Parolin and Pope Francis behind scenes? Is it that famous clip that from the movie where Hitler's like just going off? You know, the clip. What's that movie from? People overdub it with all kinds of funny stuff.
Yeah, we've talked about it before. Yeah. I forget. The new movie, right?
Yeah, and there's the girl secretaries in the hallway crying.
Yeah.
He's like, everybody out. And he like keeps the few guys in there and he just goes off. And everybody overdubs it with funny stuff.
We've referenced it many times.
Yeah. Is that what's going on?
Well, I mean, we know.
Or is it just they just shake their head?
There's a very similar scene. Yeah, like. I mean, I know I've referred to this a lot, but we know that Pope Francis is not terrifically magnanimous, to say the least. I'm choosing my words somewhat wisely here. Like, we know how we responded when Burke and Mueller sent their compilation book to the Synod Fathers, right? And Baldessari went around, collected them from the Vatican mailboxes, I believe.
Yeah, and put them in the circular file.
Yeah, like basically was a bonfire, right? And Pope Francis was saying, you know, I'll have their red hats, and he nearly collapsed in a rage. They thought he'd had a heart attack. So I'm picturing him a lot like old. I mean, in this regard, yeah, I think that shoe fits well. The glove fits.
Yeah, and we also have to remind everyone of we need a good name for it. The Ad Orientem episode in Rome with Cardinal Sarah. When he said, hey, how'd you say it that one time? Hey, Ad Orientem is cool. You should try it. And the next thing we know, he's been silenced by, was it Burke? Not Cardinal Burke.
Still. Yeah, it was Greg Burke. Yeah.
Greg Burke. No.
Within 24 hours.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, we have these confusing statements that come out. Sarah, whose job it is to oversee liturgy, right? He gets shut down. You know, it's funny. When I was in Rome, I was also invited to a meeting with Cardinal Sarah, the group of priests and seminarians, and he couldn't make it. So it was his number two. And the meeting was just, it was lame because the number two guy was all about everything modernized and modern architecture. And because, you know, seminarians are asking questions about stuff. And he was just shit. Yeah. And he was all about the vernacular. I mean, he was like, you know, waving the flag all the way. And I was like, how is this guy a headshot, big shot in the congregation for liturgy under Sarah? You know, obviously it's been infiltrated there. He's sort of like a figurehead, I guess. This would have been back in, I think, 15 or 16.
Remember when, was it Sarah or Mueller that complained that all of, I think it was Mueller, but when all of the dicasteries were being replaced by guys like, sounds like the dude you're describing.
Yeah.
They've all been replaced. And the, Mueller was like, you just got rid of four of my best guys. I want to know why. And I think Sarah made some support complaint to that motion, you know, said, yeah, why can't I pick my own people? Well, we know why. Well, this is why your story.
I just found the dude. His name is, the guy who we were talking to was Arthur Roche, Archbishop Arthur Roche.
Oh, I've heard of him.
Yeah. He's, I think he's English. Yeah. He's English.
Yeah.
I wasn't impressed, man. It was just, you know, I wouldn't have been surprised if he's like, we just need more music like Peter, Paul, and Mary in the Mass all the time. Or maybe he's English, so maybe he was like, we need more music like the Kinks, you know, or something like that.
Right, the Clash.
Well, the Clash would actually be getting more contemporary, I guess.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I wonder if that's sort of the, you know, because currently Sarah is prefect still for Congregation of Divine Worship.
I know. It's weird.
But his number two is Secretary Archbishop Arthur Roche. So I'm kind of wondering, we're seeing this pattern over in the CDF as well. Is Pope Francis leaving in eminent cardinals? Well, I guess he didn't leave in Mueller. But then putting in secretaries and subsecretaries who actually do the work. I mean, let's be really honest. The cardinal prefects in general are not doing the day-to-day work. The guys it's like the you know, vicar general in a diocese and the bishop. I mean, the prefect is taking photos and meeting with people, but it's really the secretaries and the undersecretaries of these congregations who are doing the day-to-day work. I'm kind of wondering if that's, you know, the Pope knows that, and so his key men are actually in those administrative positions.
I think that's right, and I'm not just estimating. It's late 2015, I believe. 1 Peter 5 was all over this. This was a bit of a news cycle, and it revolved around Mueller when that happened with his four best men from the CDF. Like, he was saying exactly this, and I do believe Sarah piped in and said, yeah, they're cleaning house. And might have been Skojic himself wrote an article saying, when's Mueller going to go? Sarah, they'll probably leave in, maybe political, you know, for geopolitical reasons, you know, we don't want to remove the African, but he's all but, you know, made obsolete, rendered obsolete. And that we, and as a result, proof that this is true, we forget that Sarah even retains this position of at least titular ostensible power.
Right. Yeah. I mean, it's. He's been so silent. He wrote the book on silence, as we say here on TNT. He wrote the book on it. It's almost like I've been thinking, is he still prefect for the Congregation of Divine Worship? I'm just not sure, but he is. He hasn't been let go like Mueller. I kind of wonder after the statement if he'll still be there. What do you think?
I think so, because he comes out with them like this, maybe not this on point, maybe not so expressly at loggerheads with immigration, but he's done it before. I mean, they didn't remove him after he said, hey, everyone give Ad Orientem liturgical posture a try. And this is maybe a little more combative. Yeah, try it. I like it. See what you think. But yeah, this is definitely, like we said, a combination, a flurry of punches that can't really be interpreted in any reasonable ways going any direction other than Pope Francis's and his partisans. But I don't think if he's retained the seat this long, I think he will. I'm just I'm interested by what Francis is saying behind the scenes, I guess, like you say. I think they're kind of tuning him out at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, I think even the Pope appreciates that when you have a cardinal in the red hat saying things that are at dissonance with the Pope's own teaching and style, it hurts.
Of course.
It hurts the mission, and they all know that. And they know that, you know, that conservatives are all going to run to the banner of guys like Bert, the Dubia crew, Sarah, and they would ideally like for this to go away. If these cardinals were gone, they would have zero opposition in their plan. So,
yeah.
You know, Sarah, how old is Sarah? Cardinal Sarah?
He's not that old. I think he's in his late 60s. I think he's middle to late 60s.
He's 73. I just pulled it up.
Oh, wow.
So he's 73. Good. So, yeah, I mean, he's there's no way you can retire the man at 73. That's a youngster running around the Vatican.
Yeah. 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 So. Spring chicken. I mean, I don't know. He's a smart guy. I really to pull back for a sec. He's genuinely prayerful. I mean, this is his thing. Mm-hmm. He's the prefect for divine worship. And he's well suited to the job, you know. Oh, again, thank you, Pope, I guess, Emeritus Benedict, because this was a talk about a good casting call, a good placement, emplacement. Thank you for that. He's up to the task. He seems like a deeply spiritual man, but he's also a smarty. I mean, I forget that every once in a while because he does go silent. Yeah. But he's kind of out of the tradition of, you know, John of the Cross or something. You know, he's a silent but a smarty. And some of these, I'm looking at this. He says, if he does not teach the faith, if he enjoys activism instead of reminding people that they are made for prayer, he's talking about the role of the prelate. He betrays his mission, saying activism is betrayal of the mission. Jesus says, I'll strike the shepherd and the sheep of the flock shall be scattered. This is what is happening today. People no longer know who to turn to because the church is abandoning its mission in favor of worldly causes. So I don't, this is sort of a third punch. This is sort of a hook, you know, I mean, like to say that the job of the church isn't activism, which is the central governing principle of the Francis think about it, of St. Gallen and the Francis pontificate. If people take this seriously, this is deeply dangerous to them. I mean, just I'm reconsidering what you're saying. Maybe they're not just tuning him out. This is a threat. I mean, that
big time.
Is. Yeah.
Because we're not. So, remember, this isn't like Republican, Democrat in the U.S. Like, oh, yeah, those guys across the aisle are our political enemies. Right. We're opposed to one another. This is supposed to be all in the family cardinals. Like all the cardinals are the brothers of the Pope. They're all supposed to be united. Now, historically, it hasn't always been that way, but that's how it's perceived. You're a cardinal. Right. You're there to serve the Pope at his pleasure. So when you're out
wearing
these pop shots, that's not cool.
Right.
I mean, think about it like a priest to a bishop in his diocese.
Well, and I guess the same kind of technicality, the partyless structure of curial politics that maybe opens up the threat, also kind of nullifies it. And what I mean is he could just say, he could say, look, I didn't name anyone in particular, but when I say people, you know, prelates in the church hierarchs are in danger in modern times, especially with the force of modernism animating modern times, it's a danger that is perennial. And I wasn't being over specific. He could always kind of back off after having said potent words and just express, you know, in his own defense, hey, I was being subtle. I was just saying there seems to be a special danger in modern times of, you know, I wasn't talking about you, Holy Father, you know?
No, he's off. Yeah. At this point, he can't dial it back.
I don't know. I don't know what you'd say. I mean, like you said, I legitimately guess. I don't know that he ever gets confronted about this. Pope Francis seems to have no problem with direct confrontation, but I'm curious. I am curious, and I'm not sure that he wouldn't. I'm not sure that he'd be above saying, like, but you know, I'm just saying in general, the modern prelate is fearful of the world. With, you can blame it on social media. You know, you like the way people do. They could say, oh, we're just always subject to having a mic in our face. If it's not
right,
a formal mic, it's our own phones right here. And then he kind of could have gotten in the jab and, you know, stick and move, as they say.
Right. Yeah, you know, one of the things that's interesting about Cardinal Serra is his parents are converts to Catholicism. They were pagans. They worship totem poles or whatever they do in French Guinea. No, I'm serious.
Yeah, no,
they worshiped idols.
Just sounded funny. Yeah.
His parents worshiped idols. A missionary. I've kind of read some about this in Africa, especially like French speaking areas. A catechist would usually come. So there'd be like a priest in a central area, and then he would have a number of catechists, and they would go village to village. Some of these guys would get martyred, these catechists. These are laymen who have wives, and the priests would often get worried about them because they actually have families. They would go to villages. They would preach. They would explain basically the Apostles' Creed, arrange and prepare people, catechumens, and then priests would come through and baptize, and then they'd build a parish church, and they'd set up a church. This was happening by the thousands of villages during the 1900s. We forget about this. We think of like evangelization of Europe, you know, like Boniface and, you know, the right. Irish missionaries, but this was going on in the 40s.
Right.
And this is the culture in which Cardinal Serra comes out of. It's a missionary culture. In fact, he was born in what year was Serra born? Like 45. So, I mean, this is the time when, for example, guess who was the apostolic delegate over all of French Africa during this time? A guy named Archbishop Marcel Lefebvre.
Oh, wow.
Founder, yeah, of the SSPX. He was the archbishop, the apostolic delegate over this entire region of Africa. I mean, that's the context. And he's going like town to town. And these French missionaries are getting malaria and they're getting sick. A lot of them are dying. I mean, you had to have a really strong constitution to go in the 1940s. Into this part of Africa and evangelize. So, you know, that's the culture. It's a real missionary, real apostolic culture. It's not like lazy Catholicism. This is the real Catholicism, missionaries.
Serves to explain the good formation. I mean, that actually doesn't surprise me.
Well, I'm just looking here. Serra went to seminary. Guess where he went to seminary? Oh, shoot. I just X'd out the thing. At a Holy Ghost Father seminary.
Oh.
Guess who was the superior of the Holy Ghost Fathers? Not at that time, but a little bit later, Lefebvre. So, okay. I mean, he's coming out of this, like, pretty hardcore, like, Thomistic missionary. I mean, really, I think the best of the best of Catholicism in the mid-1900s. Yeah. Is going on where this young Cardinal Serra was born. Yeah, he understands
Western values.
He did his seminary run by the Holy Ghost Fathers. So, I mean, those Holy Ghost Fathers were all over the place. They were just saintly guys. I mean, just think of like,
I know.
You seen the movie The Mission?
My buddy was just talking about it last week.
You got these Jesuits who are like reading their breviary. And they're like, okay, now let's climb the waterfall and go find those natives. you see them like in their cassocks climbing waterfalls, rock climbing to find natives. Like, it's for real. Like, they're thinking, if we don't find these people, tell them about Jesus, baptize them, they're going to go to hell. That's bad. Right. Let's do everything possible, including risk health and martyrdom, to get these natives baptized and inside the Catholic Church. It wasn't this Balthazarian, well, we think, you know, that we hope that everyone's going to be saved. It wasn't this idea that coming out of Rahner that, well, there's all these anonymous Christians living out there in the woods. And as long as they're just have goodwill about worshiping their totem pole, basically they're worshiping Jesus. They just don't know it.
Right. Right. Yeah, that gives you no exigency. If you're, I mean, there is no fervor, missionary, evangelical fervor. If you know, we've talked about that a lot, but it's worth revisiting at least once. Like, it's the difference between night and day, the difference between a seminarian, a missionary who has the proper understanding of the gospel passage, I am the way, the truth, and the light, and one who has an improper understanding of it, one that thinks, the one that believes in anonymous Christians. If Jesus is not the privileged path, but the only path to salvation, then look at what it did for a guy like Robert Cardinal Sarah. I wanted to point out before I need a notepad. I used to have a notepad here. I've gone away from that because I'll forget points. But Cardinal Sarah gave the keynote address at the National Prayer Breakfast either in 15 or 16. I think it was 16. I believe it was 16. And it was so on point. And his understanding of not only Western specific values, but American specific values. I'm talking Catholic, if I could give a plug here, Catholic Republic type stuff. New book's coming out in 13 days, by the way.
Oh, good. It's a revision of Catholic Republic?
Yeah, second edition. It was picked up by Sophia. So now we're both Sophia authors.
Yeah, we're both on Sophia. But I saw the new cover over at Sophia. It looks good. You like it?
Yeah, I like it. Different, yeah. a little happier, a little less gray, a little more red, white, and blue.
But it still has continuity with the old cover.
It does. That's what we wanted. I think that was Charlie's wife that did that. Your cover looks great, too. Our covers look kind of similar, which they is do. Kind of cool. Yeah. It's cool. Your cover looks great, too. But I wasn't trying to give an overlong plug, but Sarah was saying things like this that I was like, oh, my gosh. It was 2016 at the National Prayer Breakfast because I just remembered a marker. I read his speech and I was like, I didn't know Cardinal Sarah. I've always respected him as a kind of desert fathers type, but except I didn't know that he understood this much about like the connection between the Whigs and real. I mean, he was getting specific stuff that comes from the Catholic Republic. You can't do this with Protestantism or Enlightenment thought. And so I sent him through my mentor, Father Flannery, I sent him in the Vatican Post system a manuscript of Catholic Republic. I never heard back from him, so it's not that great of a story. But the point of the story is his knowledge is staggering. He's been trained in not just Western philosophy, not just Thomism, but he realizes astoundingly well, shockingly well. I knew he was smart. How Thomism plays out culturally and politically, even in the West. Even though he's, you know, we think of him as Oriental. He's a smart man. I really respect this man.
He's very intelligent. You got to remember the cultural context. We of the European descent are like, Christianity, it's kind of cool. We've done it for a few centuries, kind of know it. But you know what's really cool? Transcendental meditation. That's really cool. Yeah. Or you know, Buddhists are so deep. It's kind of like the Mr. Miyagi syndrome that you've talked about. Right. It's like, man, Hindus are so cool. We should be like Hindus. You know, like, where do I get a yoga mat? It's so cool. But remember, Cardinal Sarah, he comes out of like cultures. You know, like when you read about the Holy Ghost Fathers, they are coming in. The people are practically naked.
Yeah.
They're not wearing much clothes. Like part of when the nuns came in, part of the job of the nuns, once they kind of settled an area, were to make clothing for the people so they wouldn't be immodestly dressed and you could go to church. Think about that. All right, so this is the 1940s when this is coming on. First you send out a catechist, he prepares people, then they get baptized, then you build a church, then you bring in nuns, like, okay, will you please sew clothes for these people? Right?
So
they
pants,
can wear clothes.
At least.
Yes, some pants and some shirts. Right? And when they set up schools and they start teaching them how to read. So Sarah's coming out of this, and so he's thinking, yes, the principles that I was taught as a young man that my parents received from a catechist and from a missionary are golden. It's not this, you know, lackadaisical, well, yeah, Christianity is kind of cool. This was life-saving. This brought in medicine. It brought in gospel. It brought in philosophy. It brought in monotheism. It brought in Thomism, philosophy. I mean, here's a guy whose parents went from worshiping idols to within a generation is studying liturgy and Latin and Thomism and Aristotle. within one generation.
Right.
He values it.
Right.
He's not a spoiled European like we are. He values it.
And there's also there's also something to be said for the idea of to revisit his national sovereignty defenses in themselves. Being a nationalist is different from being a continentist, right? I mean, Africa is a continent. Europe is a continent. I'm not, you know, I have, as you do, we've talked about this before, 23andMe, all that visits your birthright stuff. It's become popular with good reason. It's interesting. I don't think I have any Greek in my provenance, whatever you call it, my personal provenance. I have no Greek in my blood, but I love Aristotle, you know. Right. I mean, you don't have to be a Greek to appreciate Greek. I have no more Greek in me than Cardinal Sarah does. And yet it's not like, oh, by virtue of the fact that I have a lot of Italian in my bloodstream, that's Mediterranean. It doesn't matter. You know, it's also Mediterranean, you know, Mediterranean, South Sea, you know, Mediterranean, it's African. Yeah. So it's not like one can only admire. When the search is truth, one does not only admire, thinkers from one's area. This is the kind of identity politics, which is obviously really toxic. It comes from the left. It goes right hand in hand with political correctness. But identity politics of the history of ideas, it's even crept into the academy where it's like you're only supposed to embrace truth when it's uttered out of the mouth of your country, not your countrymen. I guess your ethnicity, because the left hates embracing, you know, fellow feeling among countrymen. Now it's fellow feeling among any ethnicity other than white. But Cardinal Sarah's not playing that game. I mean, he's proud to show that he is right in line with the scholastic tradition, not as much as a philosopher, a strict theologian, but he understands it well, and he understands how it plays out. That's very valuable. To have a non, you know, he's not a dogmatic theologian, and yet he understands that this is how important it is geopolitically. We do not need to retreat from the world. We need prelates who understand the way that geopolitics is running. I'm sad to say, even the church. You know what I mean? And yep. And the flight from borders, calling migration the new slavery. Just to get back to that for one moment, is such a powerful, provocative statement, whether it's true or untrue. This packs a punch. Now, I would absolutely fortify his statements, bulwark it if you know, we had a 2-hour show here. He's right. National sovereignty is the way. National sovereignty, stay, fight, defend your borders. This is right in line with honor thy father and thy mother. And any attacks on it are attacks on, you know, fatherland, motherland, and therefore they're attacks on honoring thy father and thy mother. But I can't tell you what a smile it brought to my face to read that he's saying this, and he's saying it robustly.
Yeah. You know, on our show where we did Who's Going to Be the Next Pope, and we talked about all of the people who we'd like to be pope, and then we talked about the people who will likely be pope. And we in that episode, we said, you know, Sarah has been quiet. For over a year now, he did write the book on silence, but is he being counseled by guys like Burke or Brandmuir or Mueller? Hey, just be quiet. You're the black cardinal. You're conservative. Maybe people will forget how orthodox you are, and in the next conclave actually elect you as the next pope. Now, the problem is, as we talked about, there's another African cardinal, Turkson, who's just all in on Francis and on the wrong side of most of this stuff. He would, if they're going to go for an African cardinal, they're going to go for Turkson. But maybe Sarah, well, it seems like Sarah just kind of ruined his chances here. What do you think?
Yeah. Depending on what the temperature, I think this, you know, a lot better than me. Cause of all these fancy VIP dinners you go to when you go to Rome, when I go to Rome, you know, I'm sightseeing with the fam. I mean, I haven't done it since I've been back, actually, but that's what I will be doing. We take Abby to see where she was born. You're going to the VIP dinners. You have a better, you're in a slightly better position anyway to say what's the temperature of the cardinals of voting age. That's all that matters. I mean, hey, if the temperature is you know, we're sick of reform, so-called reform.
Right.
We want an orthodox, you know, we want an articulate, prayerful one. Then he's your guy. Now, I never will fail the TNT audience as a perennial skeptic. So I don't think that's what the temperature is. So yeah, if I'm right, if my cynicism is well rewarded, DA, then yeah, of course he just re-outed himself as late as April, you know, late March, early April 2019.
Yeah.
And no, he won't be Pope. Papabile. Yeah,
I don't think so from my read on it. I'd love to be proven wrong. And I'd love it if everyone just for a year was like, Marshall, you're so dumb. Sarah got it. You said he would and you're so dumb. I'd be like, I'm glad cool. I was dumb because he's the Pope.
Yeah.
I would eat crow pie all year long and I would rejoice in it. Be wonderful. That being said, the majority of voting cardinals are Team Francis all the way. When they're back home, they're like, Pope Francis is such a great Pope. They're promoting it. On their website, they have pictures of him saying, Pope Francis is great. Give us money for our annual appeal. That is what's going on for the majority of the voting age cardinals right now. And this year, there might be another consistory and there'll be another lot of cardinals selected. And that right now we're at about 49% Pope Francis appointed cardinals. That'll push us well over the 50% mark. Now you need 2/3 to get elected Pope. A lot of people don't know that.
Yeah.
In a conclave, you need a 2/3 vote. John Paul II changed it. So after like 50 ballots, it goes to a majority, but Benedict XVI took that off the books. So it's 2/3 all the way.
Hmm.
So that means you need to have a consolidated vote. It's not you squeak one in at 51%. 2/3.
Supermajority. Yeah.
2/3. Yeah. That being the case, there are not 2/3 of the College of Cardinals ready to have a guy saying stuff like this. An African cardinal basically saying migration's the new slavery.
Right.
They're like, whoa, we don't want that guy. Right? Yes, he's a black guy. Yes, he's an African, but he's saying all the wrong stuff.
Yeah,
they don't want it.
I mean, it would be such a polarized, dichotomous shift. Can you imagine? I mean, it would honestly. I'm going to say one of these things, and it's one of those things I don't really mean. But people that are always worried about the census fidelium, you know, these Catholics that they're always worried about, like, well, how will the popular Catholic, the illiterate Catholic mind take this, which is most Catholics, as we know, in the West anyway. How will they take this? Wouldn't that almost be bad? You know, they're always working themselves into these lathers over how will the census fidelium exist if we had Pope Francis saying, non-infallibly, so it's not a problem, so I'm not worried about it. But Pope Francis saying immigration is the main thing. Immigration is the thing. And then you get a Pope backing up to him like good Cardinal Sarah, saying the exact opposite things. Like, immigration is slavery. People need to stay in their homelands, honor their father and their mother, and honor, like the libs are always saying, honor your, not just your father and your mother, your fathers, your fatherland.
Yeah.
Those who have gone before. Have your Lion King moment. He's the African cardinal, right?
Hold up your babies.
Yeah,
not at church. Right? No, I'm not into that. None of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I like one of my sons likes it where, even though he's getting kind of big now, he's 7 now, but he's like, hey, let's do Acevedo, Dad. So like, we go up on the diving board over the pool and I pick him up and I say, Acevedo, and I throw him in the pool. He loves that. Do that over and over. Now he's getting kind of heavy. But it's a good workout.
That's how to learn to dive.
Yeah, I mean, rejoice in your cubs.
Yeah.
Lion King.
And also in your fatherland. I mean, the point I was making, it's not really a point at all, because I was just saying it I was just funning y'alls. But yeah, I mean, I would take that in a heartbeat, having a Pope Sarah, you know, Pope Pius the 13th or whatever he'd pick, saying, you know, that last, my predecessor, all that stuff he said about pretty much everything, but at least on migration, just don't listen to that. I mean, I'd be fine with that. And then people would be like, yeah, we thought that was wrong. And then he'd be like, well, it's, you know, he wasn't speaking with the charism of infallibility. So you know, God bless him. And yeah, everyone stay at home and subsidiarity, the Catholic social teaching. It's make subsidiarity with solidarity. Make your immediate environs great. Go make a difference. You can't make a difference across the world. You can't make a difference by migrating around the world. I mean, in a way, this is, isn't this perfect that, that this is the cusp, the third installment of our migration show, shows, which those were not. Those were not filmed just yesterday, so it, it's very timely. It might be even provident, they used to say. But I think it's really striking that he's making the point so robustly. Stay home. Make you know, if you need to overthrow a tyrant, right? This power comes from God, teaches Thomas Aquinas. You can even, in De Regibus, he says, you can even kill a king if you need to. Like, if there's a serious enough threat to natural rights and the natural order and the common good, then you can do what you need to do, people. And so the solution is not always tucking tail and running. It, it rarely is. Right. We wouldn't have a nation if our forefathers had done that.
That's right.
And again, I know I people tell me I beat this drum. It's kind of the purpose of Catholic Republic. But do we really believe in 1776? One, as a timeless principle, and two, as a placeless principle. As a timeless principle, I mean, it's not just for 1776. There's nothing special about that year. Sorry to disappoint you, Philadelphia 76ers fans. I mean, it could be any year. And two, do we mean it placelessly? Because it's a natural right, the natural right of rebellion. So if you're in the heart of Africa or the heart of South America, and you need to have a just revolution, rather than tucking tail and running, you need to gather your people, fight in the name of goodness and beauty and truth, and overthrow dictators and start building your place up. Because if you migrate, according to Cardinal Sarah anyway, you just run into a new form of global dictatorship.
Exactly.
Or like, I don't know how to pronounce her name. She retweeted one of my wife's tweets the other day. The African woman who's always making beautiful defenses of pro-life causes. I don't know how to say her name.
She needs a nickname so we can say it, you know, because it's hard to say.
It's not our specialty here.
It's
on
not
TNT,
our specialty here on TNT. Fortunately, Cardinal Sarah is named Cardinal Sarah. It's a great name.
Yeah, it's a great name. I can say it. And, you know, we're not going to go Sarah. But the point is, it's a new form of slavery you're running to, and it's one that's subservient to the Soros, probably Freemasonic world design of one world government, and which is really why they're pushing it so hard. By the way, they don't care about the migrants. If you care about the
Germans, don't really care about migrants. All these Muslim migrants. It's all serving an economic purpose, folks. Wake up, get woke, take the red pill.
And an ideological purpose. It's financial and it's ideological. It's, hey, we need to change the world. We want one world government.
Which is totally economic, though.
Sure, it's at least prominently economic. Yeah. I do think that there's a curiosity going the other way. When you have first world nations and first world, I mean, billionaires like Soros, and the Masons and whatever dark forces are conspiring to create one world government, there will be a kind of averaging of the economic interests of, say, first world countries and third world countries, which is the, you know, at least in the popular sense, it lends to the equality that they're always banding about. So I think the best thing for a first world country economically, and I'm not saying this is what makes it the best morally, it's just also the best morally, is to serve your own interests, right? Tighten the borders, don't have a trade gap, you know, I mean, do all the things that equal economic health for a nation. When you say one world government, one world economy, you know, all this stuff, no borders, this is ideology that is not strictly economic. It's all about their one world religion. I think you'd agree.
Yeah.
They're pushing the universalism, the death of faith. It's bigger than just dollars and cents, because if you really care about that, then it doesn't end up working out. They're pushing enlightenment, one world. You know, we all worship reason together. We're forced to do it by a powerful, energetic one world government. No borders. Doctors without borders, educators without borders, as much as I hate the term, everything without borders. it's incredibly dangerous. And this is, I guess, the ultimate goal of the Enlightenment.
Yep. All right. There's two great, we're running out of time, but there's two great quotes that we have to hit on. The first one is Cardinal Sarah aligning with my great love of Poland. I hope all my children wear Mary traditional Catholic poles. He says, when I visited Poland, a country often criticized, I encouraged the faithful to affirm their identity as they have done for centuries. My message was simple. You are first and foremost Poles and Catholics, and only afterward Europeans. You must not sacrifice these first two identities on the altar of technocratic Europe that recognizes no homeland, end quote. Yes, sir, Cardinal Sarah. Man, I hope this guy becomes Pope. I don't think he will, but I hope so. He says, look, you are Polish and Catholic first, European long third. Then he also says this, the Brussels Commission thinks only about building a free market in the service of the great financial powers. The European Union no longer protects the peoples within it. It protects the banks. Boom. The contemporary desire to globalize the world, ridding it of nations with their distinctive characteristics, is sheer madness, he said. This is strong words. This is stuff that Pope Francis does not want to hear one of his cardinals saying. Ultimately, the one world government is about, like you said, worshiping reason on the altar. But it's also about lining the pockets of Soros. Yes, Soros will give away a few hundred million there and a few hundred million there, but it's going to make him a few billion over here on the side. That's all these bankers, all these guys behind the guy, behind the guy, behind the guy, behind the guy in the EU. This is what they're doing. You get rid of national sovereignty and you have not just a central bank in a country, you have a central global bank. And it's slavery. Like you said, this whole thing is running towards slavery.
Yeah, when my favorite definition of subsidiarity, there have been several. If you look up the Merriam-Webster dictionary one, there's a pretty good one. I think that's the one I'm drawing from. It's not Pius the 11th, directly out of Quadragesimo Anno, but it expresses that it's not just natural. Remember what natural always means. It always is an invocation of morality. It's actually immoral to push up from a lower order of governing structure to a higher, a function that can be done at the lower. It's actually evil. And the cultural corollary with this is, you know, it operates basically the same way, admonishing pride at the level of your continent. Remember what I said that earlier? Like, oh, don't be, Sarah's saying, don't be continentist, be nationalist. It's a good thing. And more than even being nationalist, hopefully your nation's small. Small nations can form republics. And then you can really, if your nation's the size of your city, like the Greeks, then you're really genuinely proud. I mean, when your nation's the size of a continent, the way ours is, it's arguably too big. It gets in the way. Then you have to see.
I'm more proud about being Texan than I am about American because we have an identity. Yeah.
Right. Right. You can't have an identity the size of, you know, a tenth of the size of the world, the United States. So, but I mean, he gets this. He gets it so well. It's basically the teachings of Montesquieu. Is all wrapped up in a short little expression where he's like, you're not a European. Poles be Poles. You do you. Like, Poles, you're Catholic and Polish first, and you're Catholic insofar as you're Polish. There's a big there's significant overlap there. But this is a big principle, and this is like I have a Catholic social teaching textbook in my class that I'm teaching 12th graders. That's where I'm struggling every day to teach this in such succinct terms as he just laid out. It's like you have solidarity and subsidiarity, which the liberals like to pose against each other. These two biggest Catholic social teachings, solidarity with kind of everyone you meet. Subsidiarity means you're only local. They're not. Cardinal Sarah hereby shows that solidarity and subsidiarity go together. When you have pride in the smaller order, you have your most pride in your family, right? And really a little city, a little polis is supposed to just be a kind of a grouping of several families that are like-minded. That's what you have pride in. You don't have pride in being European. And he's sticking up for Europe, but he's still saying, be national and be the atomized version of what Europe stands for, the Holy Cross.
That's right. That's right. It was always a collection of sovereign nations that were at service to Christ and the church. That's what it's about. That's what the world should be about. It's been fractured.
That's right. And if not, Islam will take you over. That was the end. Well, he says it explicitly.
There is no vacuum.
At the end of that quote. Yeah.
Yeah, there is no. It's not like, oh, we'll just throw off the yoke of Christ and we'll just be free French Enlightenment people loving, enjoying life. No, you will be enslaved by Islam.
Right.
Yeah. Look at Greece.
Despises the vacuum. Yeah.
Look at Asia Minor. Yeah. Look at North Africa. That's what's going to happen to you. Yeah. All right. Cardinal Sarah, we thank you. Everybody pray at least one decade for Cardinal Sarah and thank God, say glory be for his boldness. We need to pray. It's a crazy upside down world where the priests and the bishops and the cardinals are silent and the lay people are talking. That's not how Christ intended it to be. The shepherd should be shouting, there's a wolf. There's a wolf. Right. It shouldn't be the sheep's, you know, squeaking and bumping into each other. We need godly leadership. I'm really realizing that more and more. We need priest, bishop, cardinals. If you're watching this and you wear a collar, please speak up. Don't say, well, I'll do it when I'm a monsignor, when I'm an archbishop. No, do it now. That's the vocation. So everybody pray the rosary every single day. If you're not praying the rosary, you're not on the team. It's Lent. If you're not doing penance, you're not fasting. Unless you do penance, you shall surely perish. I didn't make that up. Our second person in the Trinity said that in the gospel. So we must do penance. We must pray the rosary. We must live our vocations. Be good moms. Be good dads. Be good priests. And like this video, subscribe, hit the bell. And that's it. Go make a difference. Out.